Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're into the second hour. Good morning if you've just joined us. Great to have you back on board. I want to read an email that we've received from a listener who is obviously really concerned with a situation, and maybe someone out there has some advice or even some help. I appreciate it might be a long shot, but maybe it resonates with someone. And I'll read it as it was sent to us. I'm reaching out to you as a cry for help for my daughter. We are from Donegal. However, my daughter is a student in St. Angel's College in Sligo. She's going into her third year of ID nursing. Over the summer months, she has been working in Sligo General Hospital as a care assistant and had summer accommodation. However, in the next 7 to 10 days, my daughter has nowhere to live. She will be homeless. She has to move out of her current accommodation and has been trying to find a house or room for the last 3 months. And after going to viewing upon viewings, she's being faced with the same answers from the landlords. We don't take students. She's a hard-working, honest and driven young girl. She's only 19 and holds down a job and attends her course daily. I can't help but feel so sorry for her to think that she may have to defer her year of college as she can't find anywhere to go. There are many houses in the Sligo area which have been used now by Ukrainian families, which could have been used for students. I've no doubt I'm not the only person to email you and your team to try and get some help for her advice. This is a lot of pressure on families. I've raised my daughter on my own, and to have her attend third level education has been a very proud moment for me. However, seeing her lose faith in herself, her course and her country as a whole is very disheartening. She's decided once she does finish her degree, she'll have no choice but to move away, as there is no incentive to stay in Ireland. And with the lack of houses now for students, what will it be like in a few years? I'm hoping you can shed some hope for us. She's on a waiting list for student accommodation, also such as Ardnua and Yates Village. This is a waiting list of possibly 100 people. And at the minute, we're hoping and praying that she will get a place if someone else drops out, but this will not be for weeks yet. In the next 7 to 10 days, my daughter will have no choice but to come home, sign on the dole and defer her college for a year. This is not good enough from our government that we are having to do this as a response or in a response to a housing crisis. If there is anyone you know or your team knows who to turn to next for help, we're a very worried family for my daughter and the stress she's carrying. I'd be grateful to hear from you or your team. Now, we spoke to the mum, who was obviously very, very upset, really effectively, her daughter needs accommodation in Sligo. So what should she do? I presume she's been onto the students' union, and that's how she found herself on the students' accommodations waiting list. Maybe there's a couple of people listening to this programme who have a spare room or are looking for someone who's dedicated and reliable to live with them. But the way it stands at the moment, she's got about a week, and if she can't get accommodation, well, she's going to have to defer her course for a year. Now, in doing so, that doesn't guarantee anything in terms of availability of accommodation next year. But as I say, if you have any advice or suggestions, now, obviously, we can opine and have our opinions about, you know, the country needs to be doing this, that and the other in terms of housing. And that's fine if you want to comment on that. But also too, maybe specifically if you have a solution or you can offer a solution, you would make a family very, very happy, and you would allow a young person just 19 years of age working in the healthcare sector to be able to continue her studies. The text line, as you might know, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. All right, it is Thursday, the 24th of August. That means it's jackpot day for the bingo. Now, just to remind you, I'm sure you're fully aware, but just in case, the bingo is not a club. It's not something that you join at the beginning and then you're in it. It's something you can play whenever you like. It's €5 for a week to play. That's €1 a day. There's at least €200 a day in daily cash prizes. And then on Thursday, the big jackpot. And in doing, in playing, you are one of the key supporters financially of the National Council for the Blind of Ireland. It generates revenue for them, so they can do the work that they do in terms of working with people who are just learning that their vision is going to be lost or whatever it might be. We do interview them a couple of times a year just to remind people of the work that they do. But in playing bingo, you're having fun, potentially winning great money, but you're also supporting the National Council for the Blind of Ireland. And the books for next week are in shops now. You can go and pick one up and start playing. As I say, it's open to absolutely everyone to start playing whenever you like. Okay, so I'm sure thousands of you out there have your books. Is the jackpot going to go today? Let's see. Now, hopefully we can say good morning to Danny Quigley. Are you there, Danny?
Yeah, I'm here. Great.
Good morning. It's great to have you on the show. Now, Danny, people will be aware, and if they won't, if they're not at now, they will be shortly, that you are swimming the length of the foil to celebrate the lives of those who have died by suicide and to raise money for mental health charities. Money raised going to two very, very worthy causes, Foil Search and Rescue and the Bogside and Brandywell Health Forum. Now, you started your swim on Monday. We'll talk more about what is involved and the importance of these charities. But first and foremost, how's it going for you? A huge challenge to undertake, Danny.
It's been really brutal, to be honest. My sinuses are a bit blocked up now at the minute. I'm not way of sound, I guess. But no, it's been really tiring and dark but I've got the Kenigo yesterday, but it took me like 4 hours to swim about 10K.
Wow.
Which is really, really slow. Like I was swimming for about 40 minutes there and I didn't move at all. Like it was in the one spot.
That requires a great deal of physical strength, but I'd imagine mental strength too, Danny, because, you know, 4 hours on the spot effectively, you will have your targets and your expectations. Is it tough to keep the mind in the game?
There was a few times we were sort of thinking more about safety and in terms of, like, you know, should we, the boat was thinking, like, maybe we should get him on the boat and try again tomorrow. But I says, like, if I can get through, like, there's a nib in the water, so it's sort of the water's curling and pushing you the wrong way. But if I could get through that, then it would maybe ease for a wee while, and then I would come to the next one, and then it would ease a bit if I get through that. So it was just sort of a matter of, like, moving really, really slow at times, and then you might be getting pushed another bit. But it was soul destroying, like looking at the watch and knowing that you're going nowhere, but you might be working three times as hard going nowhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Using all your energy to stand still, really, again, as you say, really frustrating. Have you been able to swim every day since Monday, and how long are you spending in the water, Danny?
Yeah. So like whenever I got on at Lifford, I did a leg to Prehan. And then I got out of Prehan, so that was about 20 something kilometers, and then I got back on that night at midnight, and then swam through the Craigavon Bridge, Peace Bridge, out in Muff. So that was the actual river done, and then the next day I started in the lock, and I swam from the lock just past Redcastle. I got out at Carrickarory Pier. Again, there was a massive swell of water at Redcastle Hotel that just knocked me back. The kayakers out with me.
Mm-hmm.
They even says, "Look, Danny, we need to go onto the pier because we don't know if we're going to make it back." So again, like swimming on the one spot for nearly 20 minutes at Redcastle, and slowly moving forward. But once you got the break, It picked up then, and I managed to get in. But that was. I think I've done about 18 hours of swimming now so far.
Wow, that's unbelievable, and in really trying conditions. And do you have to reach somewhere by a certain time, Danny? And given the challenges you faced, is that doable now at this point?
Yeah. So like there was 110. Names nominated by family members of people who have died from suicide, and I want to have I only had 110 kilometers, just for a kilometer, sort of for every person. They marked their celebration. No do for them, and that's the target. I'm sitting at around 71 kilometers at the minute. Okay. So I've about to go yet.
So if you get the 40 kilometers under your belt, that'll be a kilometer for every person nominated. And did the challenge come first, and then you decided to support these charities and to raise to celebrate the lives of those who died by suicide? Or did you want to do that and you said, right, well, I can do this swimming challenge to facilitate that?
Yeah, well my ideology of the whole thing was that the river itself is kind of known and got really bad connotations around suicide. You know, the river was seen as an end point for a lot of people. And I think, like, by doing something positive on the water or around the water, or having people around the water in a positive note, well, I think it can only do good things. But the idea of celebrating the lives of people comes from my own experience of my father, in the sense that a lot of the time when people die from suicide, we fear away from the conversations surrounding it, yeah. And we fear away from even talking about it. And what can happen is we don't remember the people. No, we don't remember the people for the good times, the happy memories. We sometimes let the suicide overshadow the person. And what I'm trying to do is allow people to celebrate these people and remember them for who they were, not how they died.
Yeah, and the nature of the death doesn't define who they were or take away from the other elements. You know, in other words, the happier times, the good
exactly.
times, and what have you. Okay,
and exactly, also because you've got all different walks of life there.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
you've got younger people, you've got older people, you've got people who are very successful in terms of society and how they earn money and that sort of. Way of thinking, and then you've got other people who wouldn't be seen by society, not myself, as being somebody who is deserving of a certain way.
Yeah, celebrates all their
level
lives.
Of respect.
Celebrates all their lives equally.
Yeah.
And of course, we're all familiar with the excellent work Full Search and Rescue and the Bogside and Brandywell Health Forum do. So an important element of this, of course, as well as celebrating the lives who have died. Of those who have died by suicide, is to raise money for the organisations that help to prevent it or intervene or who need to be there if someone does enter the water.
Exactly, because we can talk all day about the whys and what needs done, but it all boils down to the simple matter that prevention is the key in all of this. No, if we can prevent one person from taking their life, then It outweighs any sort of discussion of whys. You know, if we can prevent one, then that means more than anything else, you know.
Okay, well, there is a GoFundMe page, which we'll link on our social media as well, Danny, if anyone wants to support you in the work that you're doing and join you in fundraising for Full Search and Rescue and the Bogside and Brandywell Health Forum, but also join you in showing people for more than the manner in which they died as well, and celebrating their lives and their contributions and the memories that they've left behind them. Is there anything else, Danny, that you want to add? I presume you're getting back in the water soon, or are you on a rest at the moment?
Yeah, I'm actually getting my breakfast now. I'm back in the water at 12.
Right.
No, just want to say thanks for all the support so far, and it's really appreciated. Like, it means a lot.
All right, Danny, well done to you. Really appreciate it. It's an amazing undertaking for all the right reasons. Thanks, Danny. Danny Quigley there, just taking his breakfast before he gets back in the water as he continues that unbelievable challenge that he's taken on there. Just to remind you, 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Would you be familiar with initiatives like Couch to 5k and what have you? But there's been a really interesting take on that name. How would you like to not leave the couch but be able to communicate in Irish within 6 weeks? Eamon O'Donnell joins us now. Hi, Eamon. Good morning to you. Thanks for taking
the call. Good morning, Greg.
I love this in terms of sort of the marketing appeal of it, the achievability of it, if that's a word in English. But you know what I mean. Like, so talk to me about the company and talk to me about this initiative.
Yeah, well, Gelchang is the company that I established along with my partner in April 2021. And we're an online education company, and we focus on the Irish language, teaching Irish to adults. The Couch to Cora initiative is our challenge. It seeks to encourage people to take up the learning of Irish again. It's aimed specifically at those who studied Irish at school maybe a good number of years ago, but who never quite got to grips with the language. Unfortunately, that's the majority of Irish people. So it's trying to encourage them to try again and get stuck into the language again.
Yeah, and there's many reasons why people might want to do that, because lots of people would say, I wish I'd have kept up with the Irish, or I wish you could speak Irish, but their lives are too busy, or we say they are in any case. But also, too, we've never seen as many young people, I would say, going into our Gael schools, and they need, it'd be nice if there was a bit of Irish spoken at home, or a parent or guardian could offer some assistance with homework. So there's plenty of reasons as to why someone might want to brush up or improve their Irish.
Yes, indeed. And, the language, it's under pressure. You know, I'm from Gidore myself, and the language is under pressure as a community language. But at the same time, you mentioned Gaelic schools there. You know, they're growing in popularity. And then there's a global audience as well for the Irish language. So the because of the internet, obviously, the interest in the language has grown considerably in the last 20 years. Believe it or not, in 2022, Irish was the 15th most popular language on Duolingo, which is absolutely incredible, given that there are 6,800 languages in the world. So that just shows that there is an interest, not only at home, but abroad as well.
From what starting point might you need to be at on day one, and where could you hope to get to after 6 weeks, I wonder?
Yes, well, as I mentioned, this is aimed specifically at people who studied Irish at school before, in primary and secondary school, who have a lot of language in their head, you know, but can't quite get it out there. So it's aimed at them. So in 6 weeks, people would be surprised at the progress that they could make. The Couch to Cora course, it's an online course. It's very, very accessible, totally bilingual. So everything taught is translated into English without exception. Every new word and sentence is accompanied by a sound file, which will help people with pronunciation. And the language taught in it is very, very practical and useful. So people will be encouraged by that. And in the past, I suppose at school, people learned a lot of language that wasn't really that important, wasn't that really, central to their everyday context. So this course is very practical and highly interactive as well. There are fun exercises at the end of every unit to enable people to test what they've been learning in that unit.
And in terms of, I presume everyone has the ability, if they put the effort in, to learn a language. You know, we can learn stuff all of the time. You know, I want to say everyone. I mean, obviously, there might be some reasons that that inhibit people or it's complicated for them. But for the most part, if you apply yourself, you should be able to learn another language. It's tried and tested, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is really to just put time aside every day. I'd say my advice to people would be to spend 20 minutes a day if they take up the Couch to Cora challenge. 20 minutes a day is fine. There are 6 units in the online course. And if they do one unit every week for 6 weeks, they'd be very surprised at how much they can communicate then at the end of that period.
If someone hasn't learned Irish in national school or left secondary school early, is it still worth them having a go?
Absolutely, because it does start with the very, very basics again. It covers you know, the type of language that you would normally find at the beginning of a beginner's course. It does progress then more quickly than a beginner's course, but definitely it's worthwhile. You know, people who have no prior knowledge of the language, it's worth their while trying this challenge as well.
Yeah, do you, I'm just picking up from earlier comments you made, do you think to some extent we missed a trick in that maybe if we talked about how we taught Irish, the way it was taught and what we taught, that the use of the language, we might be in a better place now, that maybe we're, this is a hangover from maybe approaching things historically not the best way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you totally there. In the school system in the past, the focus was very much on the written language. Kids were writing the language too soon. That might still be the case indeed. And then in the case of secondary school kids for the Leaving Cert, they learn exam competency. They learn the ability to undertake exams rather than the ability
exercise
to communicate. Yes, exactly. But that's the case in a lot of subjects in the Leaving Cert, but it's particularly in the case in Irish.
Yeah, but Irish is alive, really, though it's slightly different. We need a different approach, isn't it? It's our history, it's our heritage, it's our culture. It's not, you know, algebra.
Yeah, indeed. Look, you know, the situation has improved in recent years. There's, 40% of the marks now in the Leaving Cert go to the oral exam. So there's a greater focus on the spoken language now. And, you know, therefore, I'd say maybe some parents could do with this sort of challenge because they probably went through a system where the focus wasn't really on the spoken language. So they need to brush up to keep up with their kids now.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, obviously my experience is primarily with the English language, but, you know, it's being able to speak and communicate. And then with familiarity, the kind of spelling follows and the phraseology and punctuation and all that kind of stuff. Is there a cost to this,
yes,
Eamon?
Yeah, it's €10. That's the cost
the 6 weeks
of
the six-week
course. It's a self-study course, and the idea then is that if people, if people feel that they've made progress, they might be interested in attending one of our live online classes.
So we sample the menu.
Or they might be interested in going to a class with, say, Edgescale in Glencombe Kill. That school now has been in existence for nearly 40 years, and it attracts people from over 30 countries every year, and it's a very, very vibrant, language school.
All right, people can get more information or registrate at gelchanga.ispringmarket.ie, and that's I as in like the iPhone, gelchanga.ispringmarket.eu. Be interesting to see off the back of the 6 weeks how people get on. But I mean, I presume you'd be confident that a good proportion of people will get to some decent level of competence.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It's just like the Couch to 5K challenge. It does take effort. You have to get out of that bed in the morning and do it. It's what you put into it. That's what you get out of it. The easy way actually to access the course is through gelchanga.com or our own website.
Okay.
GALTANGA.com. Yeah.
All right, then. Listen, thank you very much indeed for that. I appreciate your time. And that was Eamon O'Donnell, Gelchanga founder and director of education there. If any of you decide to take part in that, maybe keep us updated to see how you get on. 086 60 25,000, but you know that number anyway, don't you? Glasses lost yesterday afternoon in Bridgetown, Mulville, or somewhere around Borderland Muff or Kiernan's in Newtown, Cunningham. They're a browny, creamy frames, tortoise shell-like. Caller is lost without them and would be really grateful to hear from anyone who may have found them. So have you seen a browny, creamy framed, you know, that tortoise shell-style pair of glasses that were lost yesterday afternoon in Bridgetown, Mulville, or somewhere around Borderland in Muff or Kiernan's in Newtown, Cunningham? Someone's bound to have come across them. We just hope we get their ears. We hope we get their ears and they get in contact with us. Okay, something really quite remarkable happened. It would have certainly been a massive, massive story a few decades ago, but India has successfully landed a spacecraft on the South Pole of the Moon. We're going to be talking about that and its significance after these messages. Okie doke. Now, we're going to talk very shortly about the Indian success or India's success in landing on the moon. But I just want to read a couple of comments first. Well done to Jasmine's mum for coming on and speaking publicly about the drug epidemic, which is ongoing. I have seen firsthand the detrimental impacts of pregabalin, aka buds, and it's a problem which isn't going to away, but hopefully with education people will be better informed, hence making better decisions. Rest in peace, Jasmine. Now, you might be familiar with the film Interstellar. It's a space exploration film, hugely popular, but hugely expensive to make. Now, India has successfully landed a spacecraft near the moon's south pole, but why do I mention the film? Because they were able to do so for less money than it cost to make the film Interstellar, which I think is really quite a remarkable achievement. So an Indian spacecraft has landed on the moon, the space agency said, in a mission seen as crucial to lunar exploration and India's standing as a space power, sparking celebrations and applause among technicians guiding the mission. David Moore is editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine and joins us now. How are you getting on, David?
Fantastic. Lots of things happening in space. Lots of things happening in Ireland as well.
Well, we'll talk about that. But first, this is a remarkable achievement out of India, isn't it? And why is it so remarkable, actually?
Well, because they're only the fourth nation that's ever landed on the moon successfully. They did try 4 years ago, and unfortunately that craft failed. And just a few days ago, the Russians tried to re-land after a 47-year absence from the moon, and they failed as well. They previously done it. They actually sent craft, landed on the moon, picked up rocks and brought them back to the Earth. The Russians have their own moon rocks, not just the Americans. And China's currently orbiting the moon at the moment and has a lander on the surface also. So it's all go for the moon. India is pulling up the world's most populous nation and now a serious space-faring nation.
Yeah, what's the significance of the landing on the south pole of the moon?
Well, that's where we think will be the best place to have a permanent lunar space station, because the craters on the moon are quite deep, and some of them at the south pole, the sun never hits the floor of the crater. So the temperature there stays at minus 200 degrees Celsius. So any water either left over from the creation of the moon or that was perhaps came from comets bombarding the moon stays there for millions, perhaps billions of years. And that's a fantastic resource. It's very expensive to fly water from the Earth to the moon. So if it's there already, you can use it for people, obviously, but you can also make rocket fuel out of it using just sunlight. So it's a huge resource in its own right.
Now, there'll be an exploration element to this, of course. They'll successfully, if they haven't already, dispatch their, I'm not sure really what they're calling it, but their rover. And presume what kind of data might they be seeking to gather?
Yeah, well, this mission relies on sunlight. So the day on the moon is actually 14 Earth days long. So they'll have power for a 14-day mission. So everything's got to be crammed in there. So they'll be furiously testing out the systems, making sure everything works, and then getting the science missions underway. They want to look for that water. They can monitor moonquakes as well. The camera's already sent back its first photographs of the surface where it's landed. So it's going to be a very intense 14 days for scientists who would have put years, if not decades, of work into getting to where they are today for just that fortnight.
Obviously, it's a turbulent world at the moment and lots of disagreements in different parts of the world, not least among some of the names and countries that you mentioned there. But in terms of space exploration, what level of cooperation is there amongst the various countries, I wonder?
I was just thinking that myself the other night. Two nights ago, I think it was, we watched live a Russian robot craft being launched up to the International Space Station. And when you think of the relations between the Americans, particularly the Russians, in fact, the rest of the Western world, the fact that they're still cooperating in space, that right now there are Russians working alongside Americans on the International Space Station, I'd like to say you hold that hope for the future of the human race, but perhaps it's just one step. It does at least show, from the science and engineering point of view, people can work together, despite perhaps what the politicians may be getting up to. And they haven't ruined too much of the space industry. There have been some setbacks. Ukraine was a huge resource for building parts for space. They've got great rocket scientists there. And that's lost to Russia, lost to the rest of the world. A lot of them have fled. So it's going to be a bit of turmoil, but at least there is some light at the end of the tunnel. And the Indian Prime Minister said in his speech, he hopes this is seen as a victory for the human race, not just for India.
Yeah, which is carefully chosen language. So where does this leave us in terms of what we hope to achieve? I mean, humanity. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, Elon Musk has his sights set on Mars, and he has got, great notions to put people on Mars in his lifetime. And yet here we have countries still sort of exploring what the moon might hold for us. So what is the goal, or what's the next big thing that these various parties are working towards, I wonder?
Yeah, we love writing about this in Astronomy Island every month. There is so much happening behind the scenes that you don't see in everyday life. So NASA's launched Artemis 1 mission, which was a huge moon rocket that went around the moon and is capable of carrying people last year. That worked perfectly. Now the next mission is Artemis 2. The crew is selected. They're training at the moment. They should launch in about a year's time. And they're going to go around the moon with people on board this time, much riskier, make sure that works. They won't land. But Artemis 3, probably 2025, is the chance it's going to slip. There'll be a crew that will land on the surface of the moon. First time since 1972. And the idea then is to set up a moon base. NASA's not just going back this time to do what they did, a PR stunt for the Cold War back in the 60s. This time is to build up a base and to use the moon as a stepping stone to Mars and beyond. And Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, all the billionaires of space companies are heavily involved. NASA subcontracts this out to them. Musk company, SpaceX, is building a part of the rocket system that goes to the moon. So he's very much going to the moon because he's being paid to do so. But he is still building his 100-seater Mars ferry, which seems crazy. But you see this thing gleaming in the sunlight. And as a private individual built this thing to take 100 people to Mars. We have never even sent more than that. We'll send 4 people to the moon to start with in this decade. So they have big plans. And I remember himself and Jeff Bezos both were on stage when they said they are going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. Now, had anybody else said that, you'd say they were crazy. But these guys, they don't just say things like that unless they've got a plan to get there.
When you see the difficulty countries have in landing things on the moon, there's been two failed attempts this year alone, if I'm not mistaken, China and Russia. It makes it all the more remarkable, and some might say unbelievable, what was achieved in the 70s with the technology that was available then.
Yeah, well, of course, it was early days then, and NASA was spending 5% of the US federal budget. We wouldn't get that kind of money today, but $100 billion was spent. But it was a prestige project, and that's really what this mission is for India. It's to show, that they're at the cutting edge, world-class scientists and engineers. And a lot of those people go on to work in industry. This is where the entire microelectronics industry came from. All your smartphones, laptops, things that people are using to watch and listen to this now. That all came from the need to miniaturize electronics to go to the moon. And so you never know what the spin-offs are going to be. And you train your workforce to do the crazy kind of things they'd never normally do. And they see applications on the Earth. So NASA's often done studies of how many dollars do they get back for every one tax dollar that they invest. And it's usually, you hear varying figures between $3 and $7. So if you're at that level where you can spend billions on space, it can really benefit your economy.
Right. Finally, and regular readers of Astronomy Ireland magazine would already know, but anything exciting happening on the ground, or at least something we can see from the ground?
We have two big events coming up. On Sunday, we're setting up telescopes to look at Venus while it's closest to Earth. We think less than 1 in a million people have ever seen that. You can do it on Sunday at 3 o'clock. Check out our website, astronomy.ie. And the big event is to see Saturn and Jupiter. I was looking at them myself in the telescope last night. On September 9th, we have the biggest annual star party, Starbecue, in the Wicklow Mountains. Everybody's invited for a barbecue, giant telescopes, wonders of the universe, huge lasers, trade shows, stands, exhibitions, great night out for the whole family. I mean, don't miss that. Astronomy.ie, get your tickets now.
Simple as. Thank you so much for your time, David Moore. That's David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland. 086 60 25,000. Our next guest now is Cormac McQuinn, political correspondent at the Irish Times. Cormac, a very good morning to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Good, good.
Good stuff. Right. Now, the local elections are coming up next year. That's the one kind of one of two elections we have some certainty in relation to that. And people now living in Ireland, is it specifically Ukrainian people, or is it anyone who's sought shelter in this country will be entitled to vote?
Well, yeah, it's in specifically in local elections. You do not have to be an Irish citizen to vote in local elections. The only requirements are that you're over 18 and that you register to vote. So we've had a situation last couple of weeks where the government has published a new guide for how local authority members in Ireland are elected, specifically in the Ukrainian language. I mean, there's a certain irony that today is Ukrainian Independence Day, yet their citizens are scattered all over Europe, and in the far west of Europe, couldn't be further away from Kiev and other places in Ukraine. They're being advised on how they can vote in an election that's not due to take place until next year. So it's an indication that Ukrainian citizens, people fleeing Vladimir Putin's war, could be with us for some time yet.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, everyone's going to have their own take on this move, dependent on what they think. But what we do know is 55,000 Ukrainian refugees will be eligible to vote in local elections. Many of them in Donegal, as we took quite a proportion of them. But we don't know how many of them might be interested or engaged or bothered to either. So we don't really know what impact, if any, it will have other than them having the right to do so.
Sure, it's eligible to vote and also to be elected. Anyone, you don't have to be an Irish citizen to be elected to a local authority either. So it would be very curious to see over the coming months. The local elections are not due to happen until June next year. It'd be interesting to see, firstly, how many people register to vote from different nationalities, but specifically Ukrainian, given the sheer numbers that have come to Ireland over the last almost 2 years, but also to see whether any of them might fancy running for elected office in Ireland. It's a possibility. The elections are still several months away. It's something that could happen in that period.
Now, this is not unusual, is it, for us to, or it's not unique to Ukrainian, for us to publish guides in different languages?
No, not at all. The guts are probably 20 different languages, everything from Arabic and Chinese to Spanish and Polish, you know, has been published over the years. A reflection of how Ireland's become more multicultural, I guess, over the last couple of decades. It's brought about a requirement to inform people of their voting rights. But it's not just telling people that they are entitled to vote. There is an explanation of Ireland's system of local governments, the city and county councils, how they work, but also Ireland's electoral system, the proportional representation, single transferable vote. It's almost unique in the world. I think the only other place in the world that uses it is Malta. So an explanation for how to give those preferences in order of 1, 2, 3, etc. Is also provided for populations that, in some cases, depending on where they come from, mightn't be used to free and fair elections, but also in other places will certainly not have used that system before.
Yeah, and the motivation is for inclusion and to give everyone, I suppose, a say on how local matters are dealt with. But do you believe and I'll reference Ukraine specifically as is the fastest increase in a population. Do you believe that candidates who aren't maybe Ukrainian themselves will court the votes? Do you believe there's enough votes there when you spread the 56,000 across the country that it's enough really to tip the balance? Like, do you believe that this group of individuals can influence the outcomes of elections in different areas?
Certainly in very specific places, it might well be worth doing. I mean, in certain local election areas, there might be a few hundred Ukrainian refugees. Encouraging them to register and to vote may well make a difference to candidates. I mean, there are parts of the country where quite high numbers have gone. Donegal is certainly one of them, Kerry, Clare, other places. In places with large populations of Ukrainian refugees, it may well be worth a while. Because remember, in a local election, you know, you only need 1,500 votes to get elected.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, so
it can make a significant difference in those sorts of areas. But it does remain to be seen how many people from Ukraine do register to vote. It was not something that the Department of Housing and Local Government was able to tell me. The local authorities, the individual local authorities in the months to come may be able to provide some data on how many people from Ukraine have registered. It will be certainly interesting to see those high population counties, if it indeed runs into the hundreds or indeed the thousands. You know, it's as you said, more than 50,500 people are eligible. They're over 18. There will unfortunately likely be more people from Ukraine coming, as this war looks like it's not going to end anytime soon. So it could, there could be significant enough numbers. Remember, I mean, 50,500, that's greater than the size of a town like Drogheda or like Swords. You know, it's a big population, albeit spread out throughout the country. But there are votes there for the winning if local election candidates are take the initiative, I suppose.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if on Facebook groups and other sort of groups that represent Ukrainian people or that mostly Ukrainian people partake in over here, if they organise in any way, shape or form. That'll be an interesting to see going forward. And just finally, some people might frame it a different way. This is nothing new in terms of who's eligible to vote in local and EU in local elections. Sorry.
No. It has always been the case that you don't have to be an Irish citizen to vote in local elections. It's very different for referendums. Referendums, you must be an Irish citizen. General elections are different again. It's Irish citizens and British citizens are allowed to vote in Irish general elections. But certainly for local elections, it's nothing. A European election will be held on the same day next year. Irish citizens and EU citizens will be able to vote. Now, Ukrainians won't be able to vote in that one unless they somehow have dual citizenship with another EU country. So there are various different rules. But for the local elections, it's perhaps the most democratic if you're living here, albeit for the least powerful arm of government, but everyone can vote, provided they're registered 15 days before polling day is when people have to get their registration applications into the local authorities.
It's going to be interesting to see it fares out in different areas, obviously my interest being what happens locally here. Cormac, thanks so much for your time this morning. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Rick.
Bye-bye. Cormac McQuinn there, political correspondent at the Irish Times. So I'm not sure if it's been worked out yet how many Ukrainians will be eligible to vote in the local elections here in Donegal. It's going to be in the thousands anyway. I would estimate, what, maybe 3,500, 4,000? Who is to say? And what influence they might have. But certainly in particular areas where there is a concentration in the population, there's just no doubt there's enough there if they want to influence the outcome of the election. Conrad's having none of this crack that India landed on the moon. More fake news, usual fake news, he says. Cheap CGI, wake up people, didn't happen. But Conrad, listen, I'm inquisitive. I have a quizzical mind myself. I would have thought, you know, to have the Russians complicit in it, because they'd have to be. I mean, I know Russia and India have decent ties, but even the Americans or Germans or, you know, others, if it weren't true, why aren't they calling it out? That's what I don't know. If it's not true, why don't they say, hold on, yeah, they didn't go up there. We didn't see anything on our radar or on our long-range communication systems. They've filmed that in a basement in Delhi. Would it not be caught? But maybe all the big powers are complicit and WHO and WEF and all that kind of stuff as well. Maybe that's all part of it. What do you think, Conrad? Let me know. Okay, headed towards the news at 11. Stay where you are.